During our monthly roundups, we always try to take time to catch up with our own reporters. We often hear from WBOI's Zach Bernard when it comes to all things downtown development. For this episode, he was joined in the studio by Dave Gong from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette to discuss a development agreement for the Electric Works project.
Dave, let's get started by just talking about the economic development agreement on its surface. What does this mean for the Electric Works project?
Well, what economic development agreements typically are is an agreement that sets out a clear path forward for public funding between the city and, in this case, RTM Ventures, who's developing the Electric Works project. So what this does is it sets out a list of requirements and benchmarks that RTM Ventures and the city have to meet before all of the money can be dispersed. So the $62 million in city funds that they're looking for, to get that, they have to meet these specific requirements that are contained in this economic development agreement.
You and I have had a few conversations about this particular EDA, and for the most part, it looks similar to a lot of other economic development agreements that have happened in the past, but there were some interesting stipulations, and there's one that you wanted to point out in particular.
Sure, and you're right. Most of this is a pretty standard economic development agreement. The thing that did stand out to me in particular is a provision that requires the city sign off on 250,000 square feet of lease space, either with a written lease or a letter of intent. What that means is RTM Ventures needs to talk to and secure commitments from prospective tenants and then run those by the city, who has a independent financial consultant with at least 10 years of experience chosen by the city that will review those qualifications for creditworthiness and the ability to pay rent that's there. But the other interesting thing about that is of that 250,000 square feet, 150,000 of it needs to be from a tenant that's either new to Allen County or is bringing jobs in that did not exist here in the first place. I talked to Kevin Biggs about that provision, and here's what he had to say about that.
It's a little unique in this circumstance, but we do understand kind of the city's reasoning for putting that kind of information in. But as we've kind of expressed to the community, this is a project that's catalytic to create, that's our intent. Our intent is not just to bring on more real estate square footage here in Fort Wayne to move people around Fort Wayne.
The mayor agreed, in a sense, with Kevin Biggs. Here's what he had to say when we interviewed him.
And that's terribly important to us, to have new jobs brought in. Moving jobs just around the community really isn't going to do that much. We need to create an environment to attract new businesses and new investors and new employees.
We also talked about how there are some restrictions on the development. Could you run down what some of those are?
A lot of economic development agreements have restrictive covenants attached to them. You'll see this also with a lot of standard developments that go through the Board of Zoning Appeals or the Plan Commission. For this specific project, they would not be allowed to lease space to adult bookstores, drug paraphernalia stores, known as head shops, tattoo parlors, adult entertainment establishments like strip clubs, any fast food restaurants like a McDonald's or a Subway. However, Panera, Starbucks, Chipotle, those things would probably be accepted. Those are specifically listed as allowed. Also, there would be no casinos allowed there as well, as well as any other restrictions that are necessary to get certain kinds of tax credits.
So what kind of timetable are we looking at now that we have this agreement in place?
Now the agreement's in place, it has to be ratified by several city bodies, including the Redevelopment Commission, the city's Legacy Funding Committee, and the City Council. Mainly, City Council needs to approve the legacy funds that would be approved for this project, which is about $10 million. But the first step is Redevelopment Commission.
And are there any meetings that we should be keeping an eye on that are going to be like significant to this process moving forward?
Well, all three are going to be significant.
Okay.
And if you want to look at watch but all three of those, that'd be great. But the really interesting one that I think will be the Legacy Fund Committee. They've been tough on projects in the past and have typically given intense scrutiny to a lot of the applications that come through. So that will be one to watch, followed by City Council, which will have the final say in whether the Legacy Fund appropriation actually goes to this project.
Dave Gong, local government reporter for the Journal-Gazette. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Zach, thank you for the update on Electric Works. While I've got you here, you've also been following the race for House District 3. Any debates on the schedule for Congressman Jim Banks and his challenger, Courtney Tritch?
We don't have any debates on the schedule as of today, September 5th. This has been sort of a hot button issue during the 3rd District race here in Northeast Indiana, at least since the beginning of August. Courtney Tritch came out changing her debate request from 6 to 4, basically saying we're running out of time. The midterms will be in 3 months. Now they're only 2 months away. Congressman Banks responded saying he looks forward to debating Ms. Trich and plans are in the works with multiple media outlets to host these debates, as she well knows. He went on in the statement to say, unlike Ms. Trich, Congressman Banks has a family and a job, and that job is serving the people of Northeast Indiana. That was one of the first firing shots between these two candidates, and since then it's been a pretty animated campaign between these two. Nonetheless, we don't have any debates scheduled yet. Candidate Trich continues to push Banks on this. However, to Banks' credit, political analyst Andy Downs says that it is actually common for debates to not be scheduled at this point yet in the election season.
Debates are often viewed as an opportunity for challengers to score points, but a place for incumbents to have nothing but potential damage done to them. And so this is the sort of the traditional dynamic where challengers say, I want so many debates, and then incumbents say, I want that number minus a few.
So even though candidate Trich right now is unhappy that there aren't any debates, this is kind of par for the course as far as standard election politics go.
As you put it, there's been some animated exchanges by the campaigns, even if the candidates haven't debated yet. Tell us more about the latest from the campaigns.
Yes, there was actually a dust-up between the campaigns this week. On Tuesday night, Banks campaign chairman Steve Justice reached out to the Journal-Gazette. That's something we followed up on Wednesday. And they accused candidate Trich of committing a Federal Elections Commission violation by, quote, illegally accepting undocumented cash campaign donations while she dances on stage with a drag queen. The relevance of that is the fundraiser in question took place at After Dark Nightclub, and they even referenced a video where this could be seen. They mentioned that they were exploring FEC violations and looking to file a complaint, but in the meantime, they said that, quote, Ms. Trich may want to consider apologizing for this charade to Northeastern Indiana families she's campaigning to represent. Now, Trich's campaign manager, David Miles, got back to me and he said that he denies any FEC wrongdoing, saying that everything was within the regulations. He took a greater exception to the comment about dancing on stage with a drag queen, saying that this demonstrates, quote, clear homophobia, which Miles called disturbing. And he added to that, in asking for an apology to the families of the 3rd District, he is stating that the LGBT community is excluded from his idea of family. So it's still pretty messy between the campaigns right now. And since there are, I think, about 2 months left until the midterms, I don't imagine things are going to slow down anytime soon.
So was there a violation?
Well, that's interesting. Under FEC guidelines, candidates can receive up to $50 that don't need to be accounted for during a campaign. Political analyst Andy Downs told me that that's a gray area that exists so paperwork doesn't become burdensome with regard to buttons or bumper stickers or things like that. He said, while an FEC complaint has yet to be filed, he says a violation in this instance is generally in the eye of the beholder.
What we have here is kind of a classic example of something that is probably not an official violation of any campaign finance law, but something that looks like it is or looks like it should be. And even if it doesn't look that way, it's a behavior that some people will find objectionable, and that means that it's fodder for campaign.
So to put it shortly, he says it's kind of a subjective thing at this point that a violation probably didn't happen, but, you know, you can't say that with 100% certainty yet.
Thanks for joining us for WBOI Presents, Zach.
Ben, it's a pleasure. Thank you.